agenda item 15.
On agenda item 15, this is the status report that we actually discussed conceptually the last time the county came before the board, which I think was in Watsonville. Is that the last time?
We're trying to remember. I think it was May of this year. Okay.
At any rate, we had talked about having another status report in the fall, and so here we are. And our staff has provided just the one-page introductory remarks here in your agenda, and they staff doesn't plan to amplify on that. And then the county has provided a written status report, and we have three representatives from the county here today to give you a presentation. And I did have their card here. Right here. And start with Supervisor Gibson.
Right there. Okay. Good morning, Supervisor Gibson.
Oh, wait a minute.
I do need to read a statement.
Oh, that's right. Go ahead.
Time out.
One moment.
I want to just read a statement of about Dr. Hunter's participation in this matter. Because she does live in Los Osos and is conflicted on matters involving enforcement. So I just want to read this statement. Board member Monica Hunter, PhD, is a member of the Central Coast Water Board and resides in Los Osos. Dr. Hunter has, on occasion, prior to becoming a water board member, attended public meetings of the Los Osos Community Services District and advocated protection of Morro Bay and the National Estuary regarding siting of one of the treatment facility options. She has also urged support for the county's process. Dr. Hunter has in the past attended meetings conducted by the county, a meeting of the California Coastal Commission, and a meeting of the Fish and Game Commission to urge awareness of and support for implementation of the Marine Life Protection Act. The focus of Dr. Hunter's comments has been on the importance of meeting the new mandates of the of that act to protect Morro Bay and the estuary. Dr. Hunter has also submitted questions to the county staff regarding their process for development of alternatives for a treatment facility, including questions about potential recharge rates at the Broderson site. At the time of these comments, there was no pending matter before the Water Board with respect to the county's development of a sewage treatment plant. Dr. Hunter has not participated on the Water Board during board consideration of any enforcement regarding Los Osos. The item on the agenda today is an informational item, not an action item by the Water Board, and is not about enforcement. Dr. Hunter may participate in this informational item.
Okay. Supervisor Gibson, good morning.
I feel much more comfortable offering information now, so okay. That'll be good. Mr. Chairman, good morning. A pleasure to be before you again. We were trying to reconstruct the last time. We think it was May. In the course of that time, we haven't had as much public activity as we have in previous months, but behind the scenes in offices and in various meetings, there has been a lot going on. You know, I could stretch an analogy of a serene duck on the surface of a pond with legs furiously moving underneath. I think that might be good. I will not try to stretch it to the point of trying to line up ducks in a row, but that's really sort of what we're trying to do right now, which is our team, under the able leadership of the gentleman you see at the table here, has been working very hard with consultants to line up the environmental and the technical issues on this. We are about to enter a very active phase of public participation as we get ready for the release of a draft EIR that they will tell you about. And we expect, once that happens sometime in October, that we're looking at a very active 6 months. From my own role in this continues to be to help motivate efforts at public outreach, both within the community through office hours, our meetings at the Board of Supervisors, and some community meetings that we will be setting up soon, and also to reach out to agencies such as yours, the State Water Board, the Coastal Commission, all affected interested parties, both from the funding and the regulatory side. I continue to be impressed with the quality of work that comes out of our team, and I think one way we can measure that is that our board continues to move forward on this project with a series now of consistently unanimous votes, and I think that that is something that we're looking very much forward to continuing in the future. At this point, I have little to add. I'll turn it over to our experts here who will give you the meat of this update. Again, thanks very much.
Thank you.
Stephen Young, members of the board, Pablo Ogren, Public Works Director, and with me today is John Waddell, who's our project engineer.
I don't think this mic is on.
Is mic working all right?
No. I don't think so.
Is the green light on?
Chairman Young.
There we go.
Pablo Ogren, Public Works Director. And with John Waddell, who's our project engineer. We have a PowerPoint presentation that shouldn't take too long to get through, and then, you know, we'll obviously be available for questions and answers. I'm going to just run through a little bit of how we've gotten to today, and then John's going to be running through future steps, recent milestones up. In 2006, again, that was our year of working with Assemblyman Blakesley and AB 2701. Just as a little bit of background, 2007 is where we had hired Corollo Engineer, do engineering evaluations through a fine screening, a rough screening and fine screening reports, and that was the basis of evidence for cost estimates in our Proposition 218 assessments. The 218 assessments covered the developed properties, and we still have funding that we have to propose to the undeveloped properties down the road once we've been able to establish a water management plan with the water purveyors, as well as address habitat conservation plan issues that are conditions of the coastal development permit or have been in the past and expect to be in the future again. This year, as the focus has been on the draft environmental impact report, as Supervisor Gibson indicated, we have that scheduled to be released to the public in October. It's a very voluminous document, and the EIR team is nervous about that October release date, so we'll see if they start urging us to allow a November date. We're continuing to pressure them to make sure that we get that draft EIR out on the street as soon as possible. And in concert with the 2008 preparation of the draft EIR, the engineering team has also been supporting it through technical memos. And some of that's illustrated in the report that we provided to you. What this illustration just simply does is it shows the relationship between the technical memos that were prepared this year and different components of the environmental impact report. And we have other illustrations that are helping individuals really be able to walk through the EIR and see where the different analyses are located, whether it's AB 32, the greenhouse gas analysis, that's new analysis that hadn't been done in previous EIRs on the project, or whether it's using some of that prior information and prior EIRs and carrying it forward into this EIR. But providing illustrations so that people can walk through the document, because it is going to be extremely large. And I think we've mentioned at some point in time that our executive summary is expected to be about 150 pages. Most recently, what we've done is an aerial photo survey for a step tank questionnaire, and that is under the two different collection system alternatives that we've been evaluating in the EIR. The step tank is where all the septic tanks would be replaced with a new type of a tank, not a septic tank for leach field purposes, but then would be used in order to take that liquid effluent and to pump it into a pressurized collection system. It's got some advantages associated with the ability to do more trenchless construction, but there are certainly disadvantages as well. And I have to hold off on drawing any of the conclusions that we think we're going to be releasing, because the draft EIR still needs to come out. Obviously, the project team feels at this point in time, as admin drafts of the EIR are going around, that we've established a pretty strong understanding of the different technologies that we're looking at, but we just have to hold off on conclusions until we release the draft EIR. And at that point in time, we'll be able to speak more to our professional opinions on the different technologies. But the point of this aerophoto step tank questionnaire is because it would certainly have property owner impacts by having to replace existing tanks, put new tanks in yards. And so similar to operations that we did down in Napomo several years ago in connecting homes to a centralized collection system, is we sent them all aerial photos with little icons so that they could indicate that under this collection technology, where would they want the new tank placed. Necessary for preliminary design, certainly. Also necessary in order to increase the public awareness that if this option is being considered, there would be property owner impacts, and want to make sure that the public is aware. Obviously, a project like this and you know, for our agencies, it's high on the radar screen, but even in a community like Los Osos, there's a lot of people that don't look at the details. And so we thought, you know, getting that aerial photo out there before the draft EIR hit the street would help with property owner awareness and identifying initial property owner preferences. And what we mean by that is that we also asked a very simple question of would they support that particular collection technology or not. As you can see, of the questionnaires that we sent out, we did get almost 60% response, which, you know, in sending out questionnaires to property owners on a first initial questionnaire, getting a 60% response is relatively high. 7% of those, only about 50% actually answered the question about a step tank collection system. 14% were undivided. Those who expressed an opinion were about a third overall, and about half of that was in support, half of that was in opposition. And this is another way of graphically looking at it. The single largest response was strongly opposed to the collection system, alternative of a step system. And what we reported to the Board of Supervisors is that in looking at alternative technologies, you know, there's something that's got to compel us to go down that road. It might be a number of different things. With respect to the Lopez Dam seismic remediation project that we did earlier this decade in rebuilding Lopez Dam, we went with an alternative technology, first time approved by the California State Division of Safety of Dams, but there was compelling reasons to go down that path. Traditional methods of rebuilding that dam would have had significant environmental impacts that we were able to avoid through the alternative technology. Costs, we save about 25% on the project costs as well. So when we look at alternative technologies, you know, again, what's the compelling reason? These initial survey results would not indicate to us that there's a strong community preference to go down this route. So in terms of weighing community preferences on alternative technologies, when we do our official community survey this fall, something will have to change from these results in order to indicate that the community, you know, has a strong preference for a step collection system.
Of the non-responses that you had, did you get envelopes that were returned, you know, address?
Relatively few, yeah, we always do, but that's still going to be, very small, yes. And part of that is also simply that since we did the Prop 218 vote last year in terms of mailing records and, you know, a lot of that information was cleaned up as far as those official results. So we just recently finished the STEP questionnaire. Of course, community preferences is one issue. Technical issues is, you know, will also be addressed in the EIR, cost implications through the design build process. So it's going to be a fairly well vetted alternative. But again, this is providing you an update on what we've done so far and the information that is coming in. Also in your package is a little matrix on interagency coordination. As Mr. Gibson had indicated, we've been ongoing efforts with the different resource agencies, and the purpose of this matrix is to lay out the various significant project issues and which agencies either have, you know, primary decision-making authority on it or are otherwise involved in it. And this has proven to be helpful in other areas, other projects as well. But as we get together with the different resource agencies, especially if there's conflicting opinions between resource agencies, then the matrix helps identify who needs to sit down and talk with who in order to try to work through issues. And, you know, a good tool that as we move forward in the next 6 to 9 months and really get into the serious deliberations of what is going to be proposed in terms of project description, that we have adequate input, you know, proper input from everybody who's part of decision making.
And can I ask you a question?
Certainly.
Since we're having a problem with my mic. Just curious on California Department of Fish and Game,
yeah.
Any dialogue that you've had with them regarding the new MPA program and the consideration or review of impacts to Morro Bay?
We certainly have had ongoing discussions with Fish and Game. The second part of your question was on topic specific?
Specifically.
On Morro Bay? Yeah, and part of the EIR analysis is going to look at if there is a spill at the plant, what's the risk to the bay? How long would it take in order to, for that effluent to actually get into the water body? That's the focus of the analysis in the EIR itself. Like many aspects of the Los Osos Water Project, there's some individuals who have jumped to certain conclusions. We've heard publicly that, for example, the Tri-W site, because it's in close proximity to the bay, would be a bigger risk to spills. Yet the nature of the sandy soils would indicate that spills might actually get, taken in by the sponge, if you will. Once we move east of town, the soil conditions change in the proximity to Los Osos Creek, and then the direct conveyance there into the bay is actually something that's, an easterly site, if you will, is not necessarily going to mean a lesser risk to the bay. We could actually move farther away from the bay and have a higher risk because of the proximity to the Los Osos Creek. And so that's part of the EIR analysis as well.
Thank you.
At this time, I'm going to turn it over to John to talk about what's going on next week and in the next couple months.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the board. I'm John Waddell, project engineer for the Los Osos project, also from the County Public Works Department. We have a number of critical milestones for the project coming up in the next several months. One of the ones in the near future are actually going to be concluding their work in the next couple weeks is a peer review panel by NWRI, National Water Research Institute, which is a nonprofit organization out of actually part of the Orange County government. And the panel chair is Dr. George Chabaniglis, a well-known and well-respected University of California at Davis environmental engineering professor. This panel and mostly the same members that it's made up of mostly the same members that reviewed the Los Osos CSD's project update in 2006, which was done by the Ripley Pacific Company. The panel has experts both in wastewater engineering and environmental compliance, and they're going to be evaluating the engineering products that have been done by Corollo engineers over the last year and a half, which would include the rough and fine screening reports that were done last year, as well as the series of 12 technical memos that were completed earlier this year. And as part of their review, they'll either they'll concur with our conclusions or highlight challenges and areas for improvement. We expect that they'll have their they're currently conducting their review, and we expect that their report should be out in October. Also, concurrent with the release of the draft EIR, our Public Works Department will be releasing a document that will anticipate calling our project plan that will outline the specific steps that we'll be following related to the to get to the final EIR, our board's due diligence resolution, which is required under Assembly Bill 2701, also our project funding, and our approach to design build contracting. We anticipate that coming out concurrent with the release of the draft EIR, and we'll later in the presentation, there'll be a flow chart that shows how these all will work together as we get to the final EIR and the final project selection. The draft environmental impact report is the major effort for 2008, and as Paavo said, we anticipate its release in approximately the next 6 to 8 weeks, and are keeping the pressure on the authors to meet that schedule. It is essentially a co-equal analysis under the federal NEPA model. Of the most viable alternatives are evaluated on a co-equal basis. I believe there are four project alternatives that are co-equally analyzed, and then the draft EIR will identify the environmentally preferable project of those. Because it is such a large document, we will have an extended public comment period, and this next slide just illustrates the makeup of the document. The first couple boxes at the top there are the actual environmental impact report document. The executive summary and the EIR we anticipate to be around 200 pages total. However, the supporting analysis and documentation will be in the appendices, and that's the next several rows of documents, and anticipate that will be several thousand pages. One thing to aid in the public and agencies' access to reviewing the EIR is this will be available as a web-based document. So these many appendices and reports can be navigated through links on an internet page. And that's being developed as part of the scope of work with the environmental consultant. The community advisory survey will also closely follow after the draft environmental impact report. This is kind of the official survey that will cover a range of options for the project, including technologies, sites, costs, environmental issues. And we will be having a number of community workshops to answer questions and raise awareness. These community workshops will also be covering information and issues with the environmental impact report. As part of this survey, we plan to survey the entire community, which would include homeowners and renters, business owners, as well as residents both in and out of the prohibition zone. But then in the analysis, the results will be identified by each of those demographics, you know, the results from homeowners, results from people in prohibition zone, out of the prohibition zone, and all that information is advisory to our Board of Supervisors and will be available to them as they as they make project decisions. And then design-build contracting is another key element of the project that we are pursuing. I'm currently drafting the request for qualifications, which is the first step in the design-build process, and expect to release that also soon after the release of the draft EIR, and anticipate having separate RFQs, request for qualifications, for the collection system and a separate one for the treatment facility, and shortlisting the pre-qualified prospective bidders and develop a short list of the most qualified around the end of the year. And then the RFP, request for proposal process, would be conducted after the EIR is finaled. So we're currently drafting the RFQ. We're also researching the RFP process and attending trainings. One of the leaders in design build is the Design Build Institute of America. And they have a number of courses and a training program, and a number of our staff are attending those. On this flowchart, kind of illustrates how the major milestones that are coming up the next few months, the project plan, the draft EIR, release the design build RFQ, and the community survey, essentially results for each of those documents, whether it's in the form of public comments on the EIRs, statement of qualifications from prospective bidders and pre-qualifying teams, and then the community survey results, as well as then the project plan, all will feed into decisions and recommendations for the final EIR and coastal development permit, which we expect to take to our board, our planning commission in early 2009. And then at that time, begin a concurrent process. We expect the EIR to be appealed to the Coastal Commission, which will potentially take several months, and develop and beginning our then proposal process for design build contracting, and just allowing each of those processes to develop concurrently will maximize the efficiency and the scheduling efficiency of getting through both of those processes. Some ongoing, some future efforts that we anticipate not happening in the remainder of 2008, but going into 2009, are groundwater management planning, and that's working with the water purveyors in the community to identify programs and best management practices to address the water supply issues in the community, developing a life cycle cost model, considering operation and maintenance and replacement costs of the different wastewater technologies, as well as their capital costs, to aid in the selection of design-build proposals, pursuing state revolving fund presuming state revolving fund loan and developing our application for that with the State Water Board. Also, a disadvantaged persons assistance plan. There are, you know, Los Osos, based on the demographics, does not meet the definition under the SRF program of a disadvantaged community. However, we know that there are many disadvantaged persons within the community, and we have conceptually laid out a plan to provide financial assistance on the project, and we'll be pursuing that and pursuing funding for that. And then also undeveloped properties. There's the previous coastal development permit had a number of conditions before undeveloped properties could hook up to the wastewater project, and pursuing conclusions of those conditions and meeting those conditions, as well as their fair share of funding for the wastewater project.
Could you expand a little bit more on the disadvantaged persons assistance plan?
Certainly. We've been pursuing Prop 50 and Prop 84 grant funds specifically to help with the project. And generally throughout the state, the grant awards for regions have been around $25 million for specific projects. Well, in a region and in their overall integrated regional water management plan, then that $25 million would go to fund a number of projects. What we've been targeting specifically through either Prop 50 or Prop 84 was $10 million for the Los Osos Wastewater Project. And with the size of the project, you know, $10 million would certainly be helpful, but it would not bring down monthly costs very significantly. So working, in our applications and now in during follow-up with state staff, at State Water Board, and also with DWR staff, the idea is if we get $10 million allocated to Los Osos, is there a mechanism then, rather than reducing overall project costs by $10 million and having, you know, a marginal benefit to disadvantage, is there a way that we could take that $10 million and target it specifically for disadvantaged persons in order to provide them with maximum potential benefit? We have an individual on staff, John Diodati, whose earlier part of his career was with USDA. And USDA does have programs established specifically targeting disadvantaged individuals. And so we've been using some of the theories from the USDA program and working with the State Water Board. There's some basic concerns. One is the permissibility of being able to target, because when you do that, we run into the issues of privatization. Not privatization in terms of the facility overall, but taking public money and using it for a private activity. Not really a gift of public funds issue, but on the private activity issue, what it is that there, in order for tax-exempt bonds to maintain their tax-exempt status, general rules exist, and one of them is that no more than 10% of the funding can be used for private activities. So then, you know, working with state staff, okay, is targeting disadvantaged persons, is that a private activity, would that create a conflict, or is it just a limitation on how much could be applied? For example, if the state on a statewide basis is giving out $100 million in grants, Los Osos gets $10 million, if we're the only one that's trying to target disadvantaged persons, maybe we would be in compliance because we're under the 10% rule. But obviously in proposing a plan like this, it creates a lot of questions, so we've been engaging with state staff, both at the State Water Board and DWR, about concerns that they have on that type of a program. It also begs the question of, well, if you got a grant allocation, county, can't you just sort of work your loan? You know, you've got various funding sources for your projects. Can't you just kind of make it work? And that's a possibility as well. You know, so. We're hopeful that we can be able to, you know, develop a program. The better that a program that we propose can then be applied on a statewide basis, you know, is obviously something that we're trying to seek, you know. And I also want to reflect on the state just did approve new guidelines for the SRF program back in July. They came into effect in August, which includes pursuing 30-year funding for eligible communities, small communities, either disadvantaged or small communities that have populations of 20,000 or less, and where the cost of the monthly wastewater cost is going to exceed 4% of median household income. And those revisions to the state SRF guidelines were certainly in part due to the work that we've all been doing on Los Osos, in part of your staff's recommendations, in fact, on, you know, it shouldn't just be a basis of income levels, but it should also be based on cost of regulatory compliance. And so that's now in the SRF guidelines. That's a similar one where our bond counsel worked with their legal counsel to look at California law in comparison to the federal rules on the SRF program and how can we develop something new. So we've been really pleased in some of the forward movement up at the state level on the SRF program. And this disadvantaged persons assistance plan is one that we're going to continue to work with them to see, you know, what can we do? Is it something that just has to be structured at the local level, or can it be incorporated into state guidelines as well? Obviously, though, the benefits, you know, in a project like this of being able to identify those who have the greatest needs and target, you know, grant money to them. Another basic concept on the USDA side of it, and I won't go on too long here on this program, even though it is one that I'm real hopeful on, is that we've done the demographic analysis, and let's say $10 million allows us to help support the bottom 15, you know, the least of the 15% who will have the hardest time affording the project. If their property is sold, if it's transferred, if they pass away, then the idea is that whatever subsidy had been provided would be a lien on the property, it would get repaid, and then it would go back into a revolving program so those who are still in the community with need, you know, the second tier, if you will, would then get support at that point in time. The theory is at the end of the day, everybody's paid back, and then in the final years of the project, it simply gets to, you know, pay off the bonds a couple years early or whatever, depending on the level of overall funding. So, again, that's real similar to structures. You know, we're taking theories from USDA and some of the work that they're doing specifically for disadvantaged persons, and the revolving fund component of the theory obviously relates to the state revolving fund loan program as well. You know, the more that we can do revolving fund types of programs, the more that the funding lasts in perpetuity or lasts over time. You know, I kind of want to, that was sort of the conclusions of John, but I want to back up just to this really quickly here, because this project plan that we're going to be releasing right after the draft EIR is really going to be laying out what we as the public, you know, the team, the project team, believes the steps and the technologies that we really believe this project needs to be structured around. Over the last couple years, one of our theories, you know, and our themes that we've been working with is that as the county has gotten reinitiated in this project and it's, you know, come over from the CSD, we've really held off on expressing our opinions because we want to get the draft EIR done, we want to do the analysis, we want to get input from the different resource agencies, we really want to get our arms around the issues before we start going out and saying this is what we think it should look like. But we also recognize that at some point in time, you know, leadership on anything, leadership on a project or what have you, you know, people have to step up and say this is what we think needs to be done. And so that's going to be an important component of the project plan is our expressions of our professional opinions on what should be done in Los Osos on this wastewater project. And we think it's important for the community survey, the individuals who choose to respond to the community survey, that they have the benefit of the draft EIR. They've got the benefit of all the work we've done so far, but they also have the benefit of either, you know, agreeing or disagreeing, but at least hearing what our professional opinions are. But we won't be making the final recommendations on a project description until after the community survey comes in and until after the comments on the draft EIR come in. Make those, you know, final recommendations, bring it then to the Planning Commission, because there's some cases out there that show that when we make sure that the EIR is tied in with the consideration of the Coastal Development Permit, then if the EIR is litigated on issues that are related to the Coastal Development Permit, of course, an EIR can get litigated for many reasons, but since the Coastal Development Permit is closely tied into the project descriptions and sites and technology evaluations and everything, those EIRs that are tied in with the Coastal Development Permit, the cases have shown that the judicial side of our government says, well, look, that appeal process through the Coastal Commission needs to work itself out. And in my layman's understanding, It's basically that the courts are saying when those two are intertwined together with each other, that the Coastal Commission is, in a sense, you know, the final arbitrator of the evaluation. And having, you know, case law that spells that out and making sure that we set up our process that is established, you know, with an anticipation that, you know, it's been a litigious project and then structuring it a way that has clarity based on prior cases, we think is really an important, you know, component of developing these strategies. And this is the first time, actually, that publicly we're coming out and talking about what I've historically talked about is the dovetailing. Dovetailing the EIR, the Coastal Development Permit, and the design-build process. We all knew, you know, for a while now that we've wanted to do it, had good, you know, principal reasons for doing it. But this is the first time we're actually talking about this level of detail. We could then have a final EIR that, you know, it's going to have a site, it's going to have a technology, but the design-build process is still going to be open. It's not tied to CEQA directly. We can do RFQs and RFPs, go real far down the design-build process, and the CEQA only becomes integrated when we actually award a contract to a contractor. And so the benefit of this is that we do need to get an EIR, you know, certified and get into the coastal development permit process and in anticipation of appeals. But by having the team shortlisted and contractors on board working through a design-build process, it provides for that iterative type of interaction, that if through the permitting process our project description starts getting modified, let's just say it's at Coastal and Coastal makes determinations that modifies, we'll have the design-build teams on, we give them an addenda to the RFP, but we have the ability then to respond to it. Likewise, if there's a project approach that, based on our professional opinion, we don't have a lot of confidence in, but the contracting and private industry says, hey, we can really come in a lot less expensively for this community, then they can still submit proposals in there. And in that event, you know, again, maybe it's something that we don't have a lot of confidence in, but it provides the opportunities for the private contractors to come in and, you know, shed light on the issue. And certainly when the contracting industry today is you know, the economy has slowed down, the competition, the contractors and what they might be putting on the table because, you know, the industry is more hungry. You know, we want to make sure to keep open those opportunities. Again, if something comes out in the design-build process also that is significantly less expensive, but it's going to meet the requirements of the project, meet, you know, your board's requirements, and through the iterative process of the coastal development permit also meet the satisfaction of the Coastal Commission, and contractors lay that on the board, it would require us to do some addendums to the EIR, some recirculation supplements to the EIR, but it would end up resulting in the best project possible for the community. And so I just wanted to emphasize that, because I know we're going to get questioned a lot on that, you know, on this concurrent work of the design build with the coastal development process. And to us, it's just simply the best way to be able to, you know, work both of them concurrently and keep the options open for the community. In a best-case scenario, what we put out in the final EIR ends up also being consistent with the coastal development permit, and we get good bid proposals through the design-build process. All things, you know, best-case scenario, could potentially break ground by the end of 2009, which is, you know, ultimately what we're sort of eagerly anticipating. It's interesting doing all the evaluations and stuff, but what we really want to do is break ground and get a project under construction.
When do you anticipate coming before this board for your NPDES permit?
WDR?
Yeah, the timing with your board as well as some of the others, those details we have yet to be worked out. We have to start working on our engineer's report. Once we come up with our project plan, then we start working up our engineer's report, because before we can do the real application, though, we have to have the EIR certified. We've got to have our engineer's report. For State Water Board, we've got to have a couple other things, too, water conservation plans. So in the project plan is we're going to lay out those details. But still, because we have to get that EIR certified, it's going to be at least the second quarter of next year, and third quarter of next year. So again, that best case scenario on breaking ground in 09 is a lot of things falling together. But also, you know, the benefit of being able to get in front of your board is the critical path there is through a final EIR. Our ability to sell, finish our due diligence, when we get the final EIR certified, if we're litigated on the final EIR, then we evaluate the credibility of that litigation and decide whether or not we go forward with the due diligence resolution sooner or later. But the finalizing the EIR has, you know, direct relationships to due diligence, direct relationship to providing a formal application to your staff, the direct relationship to be able to sell assessment bonds and repay the county the money that they fronted up front. So certainly that's the one that is in the red box.
Thank you for that status report. Any board questions or comments? None? Anything else as part of the county's presentation?
Just to keep our fingers crossed. It's okay. Going well so far, and it will be interesting over the next 6 months because a lot of the work efforts that we've been doing historically are things that, you know, we can control internally. There are work products, our evaluations, Board of Supervisors considerations. But in the very near future now, we're going to be working with all the external agencies. We're going to continue to try to push the schedule as best as we can. But we're going to be hopeful that we can work through all the external agency issues as well. And on that, as a final note, when we release the draft EIR, we'll be sending letters to each of the agencies asking them, you know, okay, we expect comments on the EIR, but we've got a couple of questions that we really want you to address as well. State Water Board, for example, this issue of a step collection system, are they going to be willing to fund it through SRF funds or are they not? And that would be a question that we would like to see them answer sooner as opposed to later because it clearly has effects on fiscal considerations.
Mm. Well, if history is any guide to what, you know, is liable to happen, probably the most challenging parts of this project lay ahead.
You're right.
Always. Yeah.
Yes.
Okay, we have a number of speakers for this item, so.